Welcome to the deep dive. You know, polymers, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Your phone, your DNA, they're these long chains of molecules. And they're kind of a big deal in lots of fields.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Chemistry, biology, even physics.
Right. And if you want to model how these chains behave, especially in like messy environments, you end up in the thick of statistical physics and probability.
That's right. Lots of randomness involved. Today, we're focusing on something specific, though, right? Imagine these polymers, but they're directed. So they have a preferred way they like to grow or move. Like, picture a vine climbing a wall.
Okay, I'm picturing it. So what happens when this directed polymer meets a really, really complex and unpredictable environment?
Well, the way scientists usually tackle this is to think about every single possible environment and every possible path the polymer could take through it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Then you assign probabilities to each combination. It's kind of like you're trying to map out every route a tiny explorer could take through a huge jumble.
Okay, I like that analogy. So we've got this molecular chain, and it's trying to navigate a landscape that's constantly shifting. To make sense of that, we use something called a Hamiltonian.
Right.
And it kind of sounds like it's a way to give each possible path an energy score.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. So for a specific environment, the Hamiltonian tells you how much energy it costs the polymer to take a certain path.
Got it. And then we have this temperature parameter, beta. Now, beta seems really important here. What role does it play?
Beta is crucial. Think of it this way. It's like how sensitive the polymer is to that energy landscape we talked about. High beta means the polymer really, really prefers low energy paths.
So it's like our tiny explorer is trying to find the easiest route through the jungle, right?
Yeah.
Avoiding all the steep climbs and obstacles.
Exactly. A low beta means the polymer is more, I guess you could say, carefree. Doesn't care as much about those energy fluctuations.
Okay, so we have this Hamiltonian telling us the energy, and beta telling us how much the polymer cares about minimizing that energy. Then, to get to actual probabilities, we use the partition function.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a way to normalize things, make sure everything adds up correctly.
Exactly. The partition function ensures that when we calculate the probability of a specific path, it all makes sense. All the probabilities for every possible path have to add up to 100%.
Right. Now we've got this framework for one polymer in one random environment, but today we're going big picture, right?
That's right. We're going big.
Looking at the large-scale behavior of these directed polymers, and to keep things manageable, we're working in 1+1 dimension, one space dimension, one time dimension.
Exactly.
And the goal is to construct this continuum-directed random polymer. So it sounds like we're moving from a world of jerky step-by-step movements to smooth flowing motion.
Perfect analogy. Instead of the polymer jumping between points on a grid, we think of it as a curve, evolving smoothly in space and time. And the environment, that also transitions. It goes from a bunch of random values at specific spots to a continuous random field. In this case, white noise.
White noise. I feel like I've heard that term before, like static on a TV.
Mm.
But what does it actually mean in our polymer world?
Think of the environment as a constantly fluctuating landscape, right?
Right.
The different energy levels. White noise means those energy fluctuations are totally random and uncorrelated. At every single point in space and time, it's like pure randomness happening everywhere at once.
Okay, so we've got our smooth polymer, and it's moving through this incredibly random landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it gets really interesting, because how this polymer moves isn't independent of this crazy environment. They're linked.
Exactly. They're super intertwined. That's what makes this model so fascinating. So the probability of the polymer taking a specific continuous path depends very, very intricately on how that white noise environment is playing out.
Okay, that makes sense. But there's also this this surprising result you mentioned earlier, that the probability measure for the polymer's path is often, what do you call it?
Singular.
Singular, right. Singular with respect to Brownian motion. And Brownian motion is, well, it's kind of a standard model for random movement, right?
Exactly. But this singularity is a huge deal. It means that the probability of our polymer taking a path that a Brownian motion could also take is essentially zero, and vice versa. So even though they might seem similar on the surface, they are fundamentally different types of random paths. It's like they exist in separate probabilistic universes, even if they share some characteristics.
So the environment isn't just slightly nudging the polymer around, it's completely changing how it moves randomly.
You got it.
Okay. Now, just so everyone listening is clear, we're not going to spend this whole deep dive talking about how to get to this continuous picture from those discrete step-by-step polymer models we mentioned before.
Right.
We're building this continuum model directly. But it is worth mentioning that other researchers have shown that this continuous picture can actually arise naturally from those discrete models under specific conditions.
That's a good point. The discrete model gives us intuition, but we're focusing on the continuum itself. And for our listeners, we're aiming to highlight the key insights without getting too lost in the math.
Right. We want everyone to understand this model and its really unique features. So let's get into it. We're in this one-plus-one-dimensional space-time. It's like a strip where height is time going from 0 to 1 and width is our space stretching out infinitely. Our environment is this white noise, W, with those very specific correlation properties. You mentioned delta functions in both space and time, so what does that actually mean?
It means the randomness is super localized. The random fluctuation at one point in space and time is completely independent of the fluctuation at any other point. There's no memory, no spatial correlation. It's like each tiny little spot in this space-time has its own independent random jiggle.
I see. And you said earlier that the way we'd maybe like to define the polymer measure using this integral of the white noise over a Brownian path isn't really rigorous in the continuous setting. Why is that? What's the issue?
It's the roughness. Both the white noise and the Brownian motion are really rough. White noise is so jagged and discontinuous that it's not a function in the usual way. And Brownian motion, even though it's continuous, is just incredibly wiggly, nowhere differentiable, infinitely so. Trying to integrate something as rough as white noise over a path as rough as Brownian motion is just a mathematical nightmare.
So it's like trying to measure a coastline with a ruler that's just as jagged as the coast.
Exactly. You never get a good answer.
Okay, so that direct approach is out. So how do we actually define this polymer path measure? How do we make it work in this continuous world?
We use what are called finite dimensional distributions. So think about picking a few moments in time, say at 10%, 30%, and 70% of the total time.
Okay, I'm picking them.
Now, we define the joint probability of the polymer being at certain locations at each of those times. And if we can define those probabilities for any collection of times, then we've basically described the polymer's path statistically.
That makes sense. And there's a crucial insight that makes this possible, right? Even in this continuous setting, the random polymer, when we know the whole history of the environment, it acts like a Markov process.
Yes. Just like in that discrete model we discussed, the polymer's future only depends on its present state and the environment ahead. That Markov property is so powerful because it means we only need to understand the probabilities of transitioning from one point to another to build up the full picture.
And those transition probabilities, the likelihood of the polymer moving from one spot to another over a given time, they're tied to something called the stochastic heat equation.
Right. You got it. It's a key connection. So imagine this cloud of probability, right?
Yeah.
It represents where the polymer might be at a future time. The density of this cloud, we call it Z, and it tells us the likelihood of going from some starting point Y at time S to a new position X at a later time T. And this Z, it evolves according to the stochastic heat equation driven by that white noise.
You also mentioned the Feynman-Kac representation. Does that come into play here?
Yeah. The Feynman-Kac formula, it gives us a way to think about the solution to the stochastic heat equation. It connects the solution to a certain type of partial differential equation, the stochastic heat equation in this case, to what you get if you average over all the possible paths of a Brownian motion interacting with the environment. So it reinforces the idea that the Z function is really about summing over all the possible paths the polymer could take.
Okay, that's helpful. Now, I think it would be good to take a quick step back to the discrete world, the polymer on the lattice, just to remind ourselves of how we got here. So in that case, we had an environment, right? And the Hamiltonian was basically a sum of the randomness the polymer encountered at each step.
Yes, that's right. And that gave us the Gibbs measure. It told us the probability of the polymer taking a particular sequence of steps. And of course, we normalized it with a partition function to make sure the probabilities made sense.
And there are two really important things about that discrete measure. First, it was Markovian, right? So the future steps depended only on the present and the environment ahead, not the entire past.
Yes, the memoryless property.
And second, the whole measure was built from these finite dimensional distributions expressed using those point-to-point partition functions.
Exactly. Those partition functions gave us the probability of moving between specific points in space and time, given the environment. And we had the point-to-line versions, too, where we sum over the final location. So it's like the probability of getting to a certain time and starting point, but ending anywhere in space.
Right. And we saw that the probability of a specific path was a product of those point-to-point partition functions normalized by the point-to-line versions.
Yes, that really highlighted how the environment influenced the polymer step by step.
And those partition functions weren't just abstract things, right? They satisfied these discrete time heat equations, forward and backward in time.
Right, those equations, which are like discrete cousins of the heat equation, gave us a way to actually calculate those probabilities.
Okay, so far so good. But then you said something interesting about the discrete polymer.
Yeah.
You said that if we look at polymers of different lengths, the probabilities of the initial steps don't match up.
Yeah, that's right. So the family of measures, they're not consistent. Meaning if you have a polymer that takes 20 steps and you just look at the first 10, the probability of those 10 steps is different than if you started with a polymer that was only supposed to take 10 steps. The future, in a way, influences the probabilities of the past.
I see. The whole path is connected probabilistically. And you said that this also happens with the continuous random polymer, so the probabilities over different time intervals don't necessarily agree.
Exactly. The environment over the entire duration influences the probabilities at all times.
Okay. We've got the intuition from the discrete model, and we've talked about the challenges of going continuous. Now let's really dig into how we build this continuum polymer using the stochastic heat equation. We've got white noise as our crazy environment. But how do we actually work with it mathematically? It seems so chaotic.
So we think of white noise as a collection of random variables, but they're not assigned to single points. They're assigned to regions in this space-time. It's like giving each little patch of space-time a random jiggle. These random variables are Gaussian, meaning they follow a bell curve distribution, and their correlation is given by how much those regions overlap.
So if the regions don't overlap, their random jiggles are completely independent.
Exactly. And with that, we can do what's called stochastic integration. If you have a nice, well-behaved function, you can integrate it against this white noise, and you get a new random variable, which is also Gaussian.
Okay. And this leads to the stochastic heat equation, right? On an equation that describes how the probability of the polymer being in a certain place changes over time under the influence of this white noise.
Right. And because of that noise, the solution isn't a smooth, predictable function like you'd get with the regular heat equation. We have to talk about mild solutions. These are defined through an integral equation, which takes into account both the usual heat diffusion and the interaction with the white noise.
And there's this thing called the Wiener chaos expansion for the solution Z. It sounds like we're building up this solution as an infinite sum of these, what are they called?
Multiple stochastic integrals.
Right.
Exactly. And the things we're integrating, they're related to the probabilities of a Brownian motion moving between different points. So it's connecting back to that Brownian motion idea in a way.
And ZsyTx, which is our transition density, it also has this structure as an infinite sum, right?
Yes. It starts with the probability of a Brownian motion going from Sy to Tx. And then the next terms involve those higher order stochastic integrals based on the probabilities of Brownian motion taking multiple steps.
And because those Brownian motion probabilities have nice mathematical properties, we can show that this infinite series for Z actually converges.
Exactly. It converges to a nice, well-behaved solution. And under the right conditions, we can even show that it's the only solution.
That's good. No ambiguity. Now, you also had this shorthand way of writing Z using Brownian bridges and the Wick exponential. It looked a bit like a secret code.
It is kind of a shorthand. It's a compact way to write that infinite series. The Wick exponential is a rule for how to deal with these formal integrals, but the rigorous definition is really that Wiener chaos expansion we talked about.
Got it. Now, Theorem 3.1 lays out some really important properties of this Z field. For instance, the average value of Z is just the standard heat kernel, the solution without any noise.
Yeah, that makes sense. All those higher order terms in the series, they average out to zero.
Right. And it's also stationary. So its behavior doesn't change if you shift your origin in space or time.
That's because the white noise itself is stationary. It doesn't matter where you look. Statistically, it's the same.
Then there's this scaling property, which looked a little strange. It had that beta times the square root of R.
Yeah.
What's the significance of that specific scaling?
That scaling tells us how Z changes when we zoom in or out in space and time. And the fact that beta scales with the square root of the time scaling is a classic sign of something called KPZ universality. Our polymer model falls into this class, and that scaling is a hallmark of it.
Okay, and Z is always positive, which is good because it represents a probability. Then there's this cool result that if you take Z and divide it by the standard heat kernel, that quantity has the same statistical properties regardless of where you start or end in space.
Right. It suggests a universal way in which the noise is affecting the probabilities of movement.
we also have this independence property for disjoint time intervals. So the behavior of Z in one time period is independent of its behavior in any other non-overlapping period.
Exactly, because the white noise in one period is independent of the white noise in another. No correlation across those separate times.
And finally, and maybe most importantly, Z satisfies those Chapman-Kolmogorov equations. And you said those are crucial for building our continuous polymer path.
Absolutely. They guarantee that the finite dimensional distributions we define are consistent with each other. So the probabilities make sense. Imagine you're looking at the probability of the polymer being at some locations at times T1 and T3. These equations basically ensure that if you also consider an intermediate time, T2, and you average over all the possible locations at T2, you get back the original probability for T1 and T3. It's like a self-consistency check.
So everything fits together properly. Okay, great. We've also got the point-to-line partition function, which is just the integral of Z over all possible n locations, and that inherits all those same nice properties from the point-to-point version.
Exactly. It's still positive, still stationary, all that good stuff.
Okay. So we have this really powerful tool, the Z field. And now we can finally construct the continuum-directed random polymer itself. The goal is to define a probability measure called P beta that describes both the random environment, the white noise, and the random path of the polymer. And since we already know the environment is white noise, the main thing is to define the probability of a specific path given that environment.
That's right. And we do that by specifying the probability of the polymer being at certain locations at certain times. Those are the finite dimensional distributions we talked about earlier.
Right. And definition 4.1 in the paper gives us exactly that. It tells us the probability of the polymer being nearby 1 at time T1, nearby 2 at time T2, and so on. And it uses our Z field to do it.
Exactly. We use a product of those Z values evaluated between the chosen points in time. And we normalize it using the point-to-line partition function to make sure it's a proper probability distribution.
And when we set beta to 0, so there's no interaction with the environment, it reduces to just standard Brownian motion, right?
Exactly. It becomes independent of the environment, just like we'd expect.
Now, those Chapman-Kolmogorov equations for Z, you said those were super important for this whole construction. Why is that?
They guarantee that the finite dimensional distributions we define are consistent. It ensures that our probabilities make sense. Without them, our definition would be all over the place. It would be meaningless.
So they're like the glue that holds everything together.
Precisely.
Okay, and then there's lemma 4.2. This lemma relates expectations calculated under our new polymer measure, P beta, to expectations under the standard Wiener measure, P. It uses Z0, 0, 1 beta as a weighting factor.
Yeah, that lemma is a great tool. It basically says that if we want to calculate something about the polymer's path under P beta, we can do it by calculating the same thing under Brownian motion, but with an extra weight given by that Z factor.
So we can use our knowledge of Brownian motion to understand the polymer.
Exactly. It's a really handy trick.
And one of the first things we can figure out using this is the Holder continuity of the polymer paths. Theorem 4.3 says that these paths are Holder continuous with any exponent less than 12, which is just like Brownian motion. So in terms of how smooth they are, they seem similar.
Right. We can use this inequality, the Garcia, Rodemick, and Rumsey inequality. And with that and lemma 4.2, we can connect the polymer's behavior to Brownian motion.
Okay. And theorem 4.4 looks at the quadratic variation of the continuum polymer. For Brownian motion, the quadratic variation over a time interval is just the length of that time interval. What about for a polymer?
It turns out to be the same. We get the same result. Again, we can use lemma 4.2 to connect the calculations to the Brownian motion case.
So it seems like our continuum polymer shares some key features with Brownian motion. It has the same smoothness, same quadratic variation. But then we get to theorem 4.5, yeah. And this is where things get really interesting.
Right. Theorem 4.5.
It says that for any positive beta, meaning there's some interaction with the environment, our measure, P beta, is singular with respect to P. So the polymer's measure and the Brownian motion measure are fundamentally different. It's a huge result, especially given those similarities we just talked about.
Yeah, it's really surprising. It means that even though they might look similar at a glance, the sets of paths that are likely under each measure are almost completely separate.
Wow. So what's going on there? The proof seems to involve these things called radon-nicodym derivatives, which sound pretty complicated.
The basic idea is to look at the ratio of the probability of a path under our polymer measure versus its probability under Brownian motion. And we look at this ratio as we divide the time interval into finer and finer pieces. And what we find is that this ratio, for any positive beta, it goes to zero.
And this means the two measures are singular.
Exactly. They're fundamentally different. The environment is not just shifting the polymer around a bit. It's creating a whole new kind of random motion.
Okay. The paper then talks about a few generalizations. One is to polymers where both the start and end points are fixed, the point-to-point polymers. You said they're similar to Brownian bridges, which are Brownian motions that are forced to end at a specific location.
Right. And just like Brownian bridges, these point-to-point polymers have the same kind of holder continuity and quadratic variation.
Okay. Another generalization is to polymers of different lengths. You mentioned that the measures for different lengths aren't consistent, which isn't surprising given what we saw in the discrete case. But there's this interesting scaling relationship. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So it turns out that you can relate polymers of different lengths by rescaling time, space, the noise, and beta. You can kind of match them up. And this hints at the possibility of defining polymers of infinite length.
Fascinating. Finally, there's this idea of a stochastic differential equation that might describe how the polymer moves. It seems to involve this drift term that depends on the spatial derivative of, what was it?
It's HSY, which is the logarithm of ZSY1 beta.
Right. And this brings us back to the KPZ equation.
Yeah. So the equation for Z is connected to the KPZ equation, which describes things like how interfaces grow. If we try to use the tools of stochastic calculus, we end up with an equation where the drift term involves the spatial derivative of H. But the problem is that Z, and therefore H, are not smooth enough for that derivative to really make sense.
So even defining that drift rigorously is a challenge.
Exactly.
Okay. So to wrap up, we've taken a deep dive into this continuum-directed random polymer. It interacts with a white noise environment, and while it has some similarities to Brownian motion, it's also fundamentally different.
Yes. That singularity with respect to Brownian motion is a really key insight.
It really highlights how important the environment is in shaping the polymer's motion.
Absolutely.
So for everyone listening, I hope you've gained a better understanding of this fascinating model, its connections to these important equations, and its really unique properties. Here's a final thought. Could this difference between the continuum polymer and Brownian motion help us understand real-world polymers in complex environments? Could this be a key to unlocking some of those mysteries? Maybe something to think about.
Great question. A lot to ponder.
Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.